Nacholand Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Nacholand Podcast. And we really do have a good show today. I know I say this all the time, but Alex and I were chatting yesterday on how many things we have to get to today. So we have a lot of topics. We're going to talk a little bit about the Euro because Italy and Serie A are doing quite well. I want to get Alex's perspective on that. It feels like a year ago now that I'm even redeemed Tomori. So much has happened since, but we, of course, want to talk about that. There was Gattuso and Spurs who are not going to unite, but there are some interesting topics that come out that we'll get to. We'll talk about the latest on Hakimi. We have a special part of the pod just for our patrons. And at the end, there is a treat for everyone. We'll put the beginning of my recent chat with Napoli Outsider, which is on once a month on Patreon for our subscribers, so you can get a little taste of that. Really good stuff there. But before we get to all that, I am joined by our great friend, producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. Alex, there are so many things I want to get your thoughts on, but let's start here. You know, last Friday I said we weren't going to talk too much about the Euro on the pod, but I do think that both with Italy looking so good and Serie A players shining in so many ways that I do want to get your impression. So you're doing a great job. I know you're covering the Euro in a lot of different ways, but tell me a little bit, how impressed are you specifically with Italy and how Serie A players are doing in this tournament? And do you think people maybe look at the league and some of its players may be in a better light because of it?
Yeah, David, I would hope so. I would definitely hope so. I mean, let's start with just the Azzurri themselves. Obviously, a huge portion of that squad is in Serie A. Not everyone, obviously. Jorginho, who's doing great. He, of course, is on Chelsea. And there are other exceptions to the rule. But I mean, look at that consistent 11 right now, right? Lorenzo Insigne, Serie A, Immobile, Berardi, Locatelli, Barella, of course, Chiellini, Bonucci. Well, what do we say about Donnarumma? Not really anymore, but still, it's a huge portion. And David, I think it's probably unfair to say at this point because not everybody has played two games, but Italy have been the best team. I mean, they absolutely have been. They've been unbelievable. Credit to Mancini as well, but staying on topic, I think many people who are turning into the Euros, whether they want to admit it or not, because I'm sure you probably know, there are people who like have their cemented views on leagues and they just won't change them no matter what happens, especially in an international tournament. They might just be like, well, whatever, they're a well-gelled team, but it doesn't mean I want any of Serie A players. Those people, I don't really care to give any time anyway. But I think really harping on one player, especially in the Azzurri, it would be Locatelli. Like, Locatelli obviously has been fantastic, and I think even Premier League snobs, David, are like, wait a minute, we need a midfielder? This guy's pretty good. So they might hear reports like, all right, he's still more likely to go to another Serie A club, maybe a Juve, but hey, there are plenty of Chelsea fans that have been seduced by Locatelli's two games. But I think also people who were plugged in just a little bit to know his name from this past season, they're like, all right, you know what? Respect to Serie A. But maybe it's an easy layup to just draw a parallel between the Azzurri doing well and then rating Serie A just a bit higher. So let's go outside of the Italian national team. I mean, there are other players, of course, that are in Serie A that are doing well here in the Euros, but don't I have to mention Lukaku first? I mean, David, you always talked about how Lukaku hasn't just been a great player in Serie A, he's been a great person, he's been a great figure within the culture of Italy, and he's been really important. I think Lukaku's furthering it and furthering it and furthering it. Whatever happens with him in terms of his future, he has just been such an amazing player recently. He's been so good in these first two games for Belgium. I think he's shown sheer class, and I don't think it surprises anyone, but ever since the Eriksen collapse on Saturday, obviously Lukaku later that day to the cameras, and you could just see it yesterday as well with the Danish players after the game. Lukaku's not parading around, he's not being obnoxious, quite the opposite. He's giving real genuine warm hugs to everyone. So, you know, I know this is about how people are thinking about Italy and Serie A players, but just Lukaku in general, David, he's actually a perfect example if we're just talking about the football aspect of things, because you have many Premier League fans who kind of remember Lukaku from the United days and even before that at Everton and West Brom. And at that time, yeah, he scored goals, but he was so unpolished. And there are some fans who are still trying to pretend that he's the same player he used to be. But most fans, David, will look at Lukaku and they'll actually see, you know what? Fair play to him. He's improved. And I don't even hear a lot of, well, he's improved because he's in Serie A, which would be a diss at Serie A. I hear a lot of people saying, no, he's improved. And Inter were a really good team this season. So I think outside of the Italian national team and inside of it, I think people are gaining a bit of respect for Serie A. But I wouldn't go too far. Right? Because people will just say at the end of the day, well, they play a pragmatic style of football. And of course, they're gelled. They've always kind of been about the team and not the individual, which, by the way, is a good thing. But I just don't know if people are going too far on their impressions of Serie A from this Euros. But I do think the arrow's only going one direction, and it's a good direction. I think so far, you know, this isn't exactly the question you asked me, but to give it a different spin, David, if there's one domestic league that is winners so far from the Euros, it's Serie A. It is Serie A. And I don't know how anybody could argue with that. So maybe that's the best way I can answer the question. I think Serie A so far is the winning league from this Euros. So yeah, that's my answer, David. And what's your main takeaway so far, speaking of the Azzurri, on them?
Well, very well said, Alex. Great answer. And yeah, there's this tweet floating around with stats on, you know, goals, assists, man of the match. It was from a few days ago, and Serie A was at the top. And yeah, look, you know, as awful as the Eriksen situation was, and man, I have a lot of thoughts on that, but we digress there. Like, Kier emerged as, you know, another great figure. Now people want to anoint him Milan captain. You mentioned Lukaku. I couldn't agree more on him. What a guy. Like, you know, if you're a Serie A fan, even if you don't like Inter, we should be really grateful to have such a great player and great figure there. But let's talk about the Azzurri. You'll hear more in the chat with Napoli Outsider. We talked about the parallels between this team and Sarri's Napoli. Huge credit to Mancini. I remember when I interviewed Paolo Condol, who was probably the most famous Italian journalist. And this was a long time ago, right, when Mancini was appointed. And he was so confident on Mancini doing well. He said he's an international manager, coached abroad, really has a perspective that we rarely see on an Azzurri manager. So, you know, he pushed a lot of young players, started them even before they were at the club level, was rewarded for that. Kind of didn't copy, but was inspired by Sarri's Napoli, who I think most people would agree was the most fun team to watch in Serie A in recent years. So great. I agree with you. Italy's been the most impressive so far. And you can point to Turkey and Switzerland not being good, fair play. But anyone who's followed the history of the Azzurri knows that, Lord, have we struggled against poor teams. I think of Costa Rica recently, on and on and on. Italy usually does not start strong at these tournaments. Italy does not usually score 3 goals in matches. So yeah, there's really a lot to be excited if you are an Azzurri fan. I'll say this, you know, we'll get to Locatelli in a second. I want to give a huge shout out to Spinazzola. I think he's been absolutely fantastic to watch at this Euro. Look, Italy's had a lot of good wing backs, winger types in recent years. You know, the World Cup team, we had Grosso, Zambrotta, Camoranesi, who, you know, if we want to add the defensive phase too, I would probably take him over Spinazzola. But offensively, this guy's really so much fun. And I really hope Mourinho at Roma is not going to ruin this for us, because I'm really enjoying the Spinazzola show. Kudos to Berardi. Berardi, you know, the Sassuolo player who's always never wanted to go to a bigger club because he's pretty shy, introverted, likes, you know, being a big fish in a small pond, or maybe he just doesn't want too much pressure. I think he's been absolutely awesome at these Euros. So this is an exciting team. Look, you know, If you're an Azzurri fan, I think this is a reminder that sometimes in life it really is darkest before dawn. Think of 2018 not making the World Cup. And then we were like, man, there's really not that much talent on this Italy team. And now we have so many players that have emerged. So very exciting there. We have to mention Locatelli having a great Euro. Look, you know, I don't think there's any player I've changed my mind more on than Locatelli. And probably a lot of people now see me. It's been a while since I like talking so much about him. You know, I love the Zerbi at Sassuolo. I think he did a great job there. But for a while, I really didn't think Locatelli was going to do much. To me, he was the typical young player that was easy to overrate. He came from a big club at Milan, scored a fantastic goal against Juve, right? I don't think it was his debut, but it was shortly after. So there was a lot of hype on him. Then it really didn't work out at Milan. They sell him for 12 million. And we can add this to the long list of things Leonardo did really poorly at Milan. I'm going to give myself some credit. Now it's become pretty common to point out how many bad things Leonardo did at Milan. I've been saying that for a long time. Look, you know, they preferred Biglia and Bakayoko. They sold them for 12 million at the time. That was a decent return. Again, full plus Valenza on a homegrown player, no buyback clause. That's come back to bat them. But for Milan, there is a huge silver lining. As disappointing as it is to see Locatelli, to a certain extent, Donnarumma is going to go to PSG, two homegrown players gone. At least with Locatelli, they have Cassie and Bennacer, who have been fantastic. Bennacer's probably the closest to the Locatelli role. I think they're very comparable players. And then on top of that, you also have Tonali. So to me, the lesson here is be patient with Tonali, because Tonali is about the age that Milan sold Locatelli for. So on the bright side, if you're a Milan fan, at least you can say, hey, probably Locatelli wouldn't have become this good at Milan. Yeah, it sucks we didn't have a buyback clause, but at least it's not that we need him on the club. So we are losing out mainly on a financial gain. But again, had he stayed at Milan, he probably never develops into that. So I don't know. I think if you're a Juve fan, is it possible that Locatelli has now priced himself out of Serie A? It's going to be tough. I mean, Juve is going to try to offer, you know, players like Rovella, Fagioli, something like that. Sassuolo and Juve have a great relationship. To me, it's going to come down to, is Locatelli going to say, you know what, I do want to stay in Serie A at least for a little while longer, or even be at Juve for a very long time because he's so young. But short of that, I don't know. I think he's playing so well. He's at an age where teams are like, he's so young, he's shown enough. It's kind of scary. So, yeah. But Locatelli's been great. As much as I like Verratti, I think Mancini's got a role with what we have right now. But let's flip and let's talk about something completely positive for Milan. And this was the redemption of Tomori. Again, it happened around 24 hours ago compared to what we're recording. But so much has happened, it feels like a week ago. Alex, obviously, you're Mr. Chelsea. I know you've also, you know, I think you've spoken to his father recently. So tell us a little bit, what was the reaction in Chelsea circles on the news that Tomori is now fully a Milan player?
Well, it was like the longest rip of a Band-Aid off your skin, which is not good. You want to rip a Band-Aid off quickly. So, yeah, it was kind of painful because I think right when we made the deal with Milan and even the temperature of Tomori's situation with Chelsea at the time, where Frank Lampard was actually still in charge, things did feel a little bit hopeless. So at the time, I think people were actually a bit more ready for it because Lampard, like I said, was the manager. And weirdly enough, even though he was the manager that helped Tomori break through, he had him at Derby County even before he had him at Chelsea, it very much felt like Lampard had almost made his decision on Tomori. Or at least he had made a decision that it wasn't happening anytime soon for Tomori to get back in the side. And that in order for him to get back in the side, I remember saying this and almost every Chelsea fan agreed with me. At the time I was saying when Tomori was about to make his move to Milan, well, the only way he can really have a future here at Chelsea now is if he goes out on loan and kills it. Well, the irony is that's what he did. But of course, the deal gave Milan the power. Now, I did say at the time, and I remember even saying to the Serie A listeners that tune into this podcast. I said, I don't want to bore you with Chelsea's details, but one reason why they were at least okay including that option is because they do have this young defender, Mark Gahey, who had a really good season in the Championship, so the league below the Premier League, and they rate him really highly. So it did influence that a little bit, like, okay, if we lose Tomori flat out, do we still have young defenders that we can promote if they earn it? And the answer is yes. But still, Tomori, David, was so good at Milan. And then, of course, Frank leaves or gets sacked, however you want to term it. And even though Chelsea's defense was unbelievable under Tuchel, you are dealing with different ages than Tomori, who were good. Like Rudiger, late 20s, Christensen, mid 20s, Thiago Silva, he's 85 years old, I think. Cesar Azpilicueta, he's not a real center back, and he's in the back nine. And Reece James, not a real center back. So it did start to look like, wait a minute, hold on, where's Fick? We need Fick back. And also, what could Tuchel do with Fikayo Tomori? We saw what Tuchel did with Rudiger and Christensen. What could he do with Tomori? But we all kind of knew, well, it's out of his hands. So if Milan want to keep him and Fikayo's down with it, he's staying there. So, David, the reason why I say it was like a really slow rip of a Band-Aid is we kind of knew all along, well, if he continues to play well, and especially if they get Champions League football, Milan, he's going to stay there and we're going to lose him. But because it was up in the air until the last day of the season, let's be real, Milan almost missed Champions League football. I think a lot of Chelsea fans were still hoping that either Fick changed his mind or Milan would change their mind if they didn't have Champions League football. And maybe even Tuchel would be like, come on, Fick, you got to come back here. So I think there were some hopeless romantics. And just knowing that Chelsea could be looking for a center back, which I'm not sure is at the top of their list, but they could be looking for a center back that they would probably spend more money on than Milan just bought Fikayo for. So it hurts because, David, if he turns out to be any type of a good player at this level, at Milan's level, at Chelsea's level, he was free to Chelsea. No amortization. And he gets along really well with some of our really good young players like a Mount and a Reece James. So it hurts. It really hurts. But on the same spectrum, I would say that when the deal was made official yesterday, everybody's like, good luck. You know,
there's
no hard feelings towards Fick. Of course not. Absolutely not. Really a lovely guy, father, lovely guy. And in a way, Chelsea fans do kind of take points with this. If he goes on to have a really good career at Milan, still a great look for our academy. At the end of the day, it's a great look for our academy. And it's actually kind of a cool look. Like, hey, that's not happening often. An English player, you know, from Chelsea's academy or really any English academy going on to be a starting center back for a historic club like Milan. We haven't seen that all that much. So at the same time, I think we're all really excited, but it is a bit bittersweet because it's like, wow, what could have Tuchel done with Tomori? And then we definitely wouldn't be hearing about Chelsea looking for any center backs. So yeah, it hurts, but we wish him well. And for me, I'm selfish. I get to obviously follow his career even more intimately doing this podcast. So I'm really happy though for Milan. I'm really happy for Serie A. And David, maybe I should have just said this and that would have been my answer. You know how everybody's always wanted me to pick a Serie A team while doing the podcast? I think we have it. I think we have it. I got to go Milan right now. I have to. I mean, I really like Fick. I've had his father on twice. I know Fick a little bit. We know Asmir Begovic, my once-a-month co-host on my podcast, was at Milan for a half a season the previous season. Who doesn't love a little Zlatan? I love Simon Kjær. Last thing, David, I mean, what he did, obviously, with Eriksen and just the way he led the whole team, what he did with Eriksen's wife or girlfriend. I forget, actually, the relationship there, but nonetheless, the consoling. Seems like a stand-up guy, but I even have further background info on that guy. When I had Fikayo Tomori's father on the podcast last time, of course, was a couple months after Fikayo had been at Milan, and he said, oh, someone like Simon Kjær has been amazing to Fikayo in terms of really helping him settle in, and he's been a really good shoulder for him to lean on. So, like, I love this guy. I absolutely love this guy. So, yeah, based on what Asmir's told me about some Milan players and now Fick being there. There you go, David. My hat is officially in the ring, and it is with Milan. So That's my take on everything Fikayo Tomori related. What did you make of the deal?
Very well said. And yeah, I like that you've pledged your allegiance to them. A good pick. Well, let's just start with Kier. I think right now Milan has Kier and Tomori as their starting center backs. It's very good, very strong. They have some reps together. They've already played half a season together. I thought Tomori was Milan's best defender second half of the season. Nice to have that duo. Great that you gave us some insight there. This gives Milan a nice chip with Romagnoli. He has 1 year left on their deal. He's a Raiola client. There is no way Milan can find themselves in the same position with Donnarumma and Çalhanoğlu that they are now. So to me, having Tomori and Kjaer as your starters makes it easy on what to do with Romagnoli. To me, you have to flip him for another asset or a plusvalenza. So get a player that actually helps you. Yeah, I get Milan's in the CL and you need three center backs. I get it. But has Romagnoli played as well as the other two? You're dealing with a Raiola client. This is going to be the contract where he wants to make the most money because in his prime, to me, he's worth more as an asset. Kudos to Maldini and Massara for getting that option to buy with Chelsea. At the time, we thought it was a high amount, right? 28.5 million. You know, it's not peanuts for sure. But you look at after the way he played, Chelsea could have probably easily gotten more money for him from a Premier League club. I mean, when I see tweets on center backs in the Premier League and what they're going for, I think Tomori would have gone for more. So kudos to Milan. To me, the key was getting that option to buy set at that price. He's going to be 24 in December. He's just entering his prime. Odds are, if you had to, what's more likely, his value goes up or down. I think almost everyone would say up. But he's so young that you're not going to lose out on that. So I think for Milan, this is a great move. For Chelsea, look, you know, and Alex, I feel like a proud dad when I see you tweeting about amortization. This is like a pure capital gain on Chelsea, a plusvalenza on a homegrown player. And yeah, you can say, and I've had some people tweet me where you look at the market now, and Chelsea is one of those teams that seems they can just spend, spend, spend. So you could say, well, how much does that even matter to a club like Chelsea? Well, I would say it mattered enough to Chelsea to have a loan army for years. And they weren't really doing the loan army to say, oh, you know, we're just going to throw 100 players against the wall and maybe 20 of them stick and that's going to be our players. I don't think it's that. They, you know, they calculate that you can make plusvalenza gains on these players eventually having them under control. So there's a reason like Chelsea does well there in that sense. I think you said it very well, Alex. It says a lot about the Chelsea Academy there. I think you're going to see Milan and Chelsea because they're also talking Giroud. I think that's going to be a nice partnership. Chelsea seems to do well in Serie A. So look, really, really good deal. I don't want to rain on the parade, but the one, if you ask me, you know, what is another takeaway from the Tomori deal? And this is something Napoli Outsider and I got into our monthly chat, and it was my point, not his, is that we are seeing these loans with option to buy are great in the moment because you get the player and you're like, oh, okay, I get the player now and I'm going to have to pay him later. And this isn't just Milan with Tomori. This also applies to Juve with Chiesa, who was both Tomori and Chiesa were excellent last season for Milan and Juve. But the problem with these loans with options to buy is then when the bill becomes due, you are spending considerable money just to keep a player you already had. So yeah, it's great. You own him outright. But usually, you know, when you're investing a lot of money, you're doing it with the hope of improving your squad. So you really are just kicking the can down the road. And this is even more true for Chiesa. It was going to be very expensive for Juve. So great that they have him. But then Juve fans have to always keep thinking at some point we have to pay for him. So it's not that we're like, oh, you know, we could just get Vlahovic now. It's like, no, actually, you have to pay for Chiesa too. So I think it's important to look at that. I think in Serie A, we are seeing a lot of short-term gain. Think too of the swap Pjanic-Arthur. In the short term, yeah, it's great. You get this massive plusvalenza on Pjanic. But then the downside is because you're doing it at these inflated prices, the amortization on R4 is just absurd. Like R4 is like in the NBA, the contracts like Wall and Westbrook, that those were the only two players you could trade them for because they were the worst contracts. So R4 is kind of in that boat. So that's the other takeaway that I would take from this. Great for Milan. Look, I'm not crapping on this. They're getting a very good player for cheap. But I think it's important for fans to also remember the downside of these loans with option to buy, Alex. So let's hop into some hot transfer topics, Alex. Things changed so quickly. When I wrote out the outline, it was what could Spurs fans expect from Gattuso, but now Gattuso's not a candidate. So before I give my thoughts on this, Alex, tell me, how much are you enjoying the Spurs coaching search so far?
It's absolutely amazing. It's amazing. I mean, they had that documentary for their season the other season, but now I want one of the off season. I want to know what's going on in these board meetings, if there are even board meetings at this point at Spurs. David, what's really funny, and I know it's going to sound like banter, and I do mean it as banter, but I also kind of mean it seriously. I'm wondering how many people listening right now know Spurs' nickname of bottlers, like they bottle things. That's exactly what they're doing in this managerial search. I mean, they're doing that to a T. Now, sometimes it's said that they're the ones pulling out on a manager, but at the end of the day, they're bottling everything right now. They absolutely are. And David, it's honestly hard to believe that this is a professional sports team that is having this much of a circus of a managerial search. And I love it. I absolutely love it because they're really an unserious club at the moment. And you remember Chiellini's line about Tottenham losing? It's the history of yeah. the Tottenham. It really is Tottenham. This is Tottenham. And you know, I'm sure there are thousands and thousands and thousands of Tottenham fans that if I didn't know they were Tottenham fans, I would get along with them great. But at the end of the day, I feel bad for them a little bit because their club is just not going to reach the heights that I think they dream their club to reach. And it all starts at the top. And it just seems like, David, they have a line of how far they'll go to reach success. You know what I mean? So like when you categorize yourself as a big club, which Tottenham would categorize themselves as, don't you have to actually act like a big club? At least somewhat consistently? They don't. And if you're Harry Kane, this is kind of my last point. If you're Harry Kane and you've already wanted to leave, you already wanted to leave a few months ago before this whole ridiculous manager, I can't say carousel because they haven't had actually a manager, but this managerial search, Harry Kane must be sitting there thinking, this is how you're trying to keep me? This, showing this indecision to the world, is how you're trying to keep me? You must be having a laugh. So it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful that this is happening for Chelsea fans, for any rival Premier League fans. I mean, I am fully ready to say that Leicester City for the next 5 years, easy, will have a better future than Tottenham. Easy. I mean, look at the business Leicester City do compared to Tottenham even. Leicester City buy players that are young and have resale value, and they have a set manager in Brendan Rodgers. Look at Tottenham. It's Kane and Son holding that whole institution up. I mean, I love it. I absolutely love it. And I hope they keep going through managers. We said before we even started recording, at this point, they might try and trick Greg Popovich into managing them because he might just think, oh, yeah, I work for Spurs. So, yeah, I'll manage you as well. Or maybe Ted Lasso, right? Ted Lasso, Jason Sudeikis, maybe they can get him. No, it's absolutely amazing. I'm loving it, David. So yeah, your further thoughts on it?
Yeah, well, I had to set you up with that. So I'm actually going to make a few points on this. One financial, but one maybe a little bit more serious. I will tell you, one of my main takeaways from the Gattuso to Spurs thing is just the radical difference in sporting culture and fans' expectations. And this is what I mean by this. I go back to when the Super League was announced, and I became super cynical when I saw Premier League fans really demonstrate, and I was like, man, they actually think they're going to stop this train that's already left the station. Like, there is just too much money to be made in the Super League. I was like, I hate to say I thought they were naive, but I was like, that's how cynical I was. And that's because, you know, I grew up with the Serie A sporting culture. So when I saw yesterday the backlash on Gattuso from Spurs fans, you know, digging up some quotes, which, you know, fair is fair. They're not great quotes, to say the least. I admired that, the sense that fans felt like they had the agency, like they have the power to stop something like that happening. And guess what? They have good reason to think that, because they do. They've done it multiple times. So I really respect that culture of thinking, you know what? We do have agency. We do have our say in our club. And look, in Serie A, sometimes you do see it a little bit. We saw Milan fans demanding to want to speak to Donnarumma, but Donnarumma still left. And they were demanding that Donnarumma either sign a contract or not play against Juve in a key game for the Champions League. Now, by the way, Donnarumma played and Milan won, but Donnarumma left. We saw Inter fans recently want to meet with Marotta and Ausilio to talk about the market. But guess what? Hakimi is almost certainly leaving, and we're going to get to that in a minute. So I really respect that, and I'll take it a step further. When I saw the reaction from Spurs fans on Gattuso and digging up the quotes and making a big deal out of it, and God bless them for doing it, I can't help but think of the crickets that you heard from Serie A fan or Italy with Arnautovic being linked to Bologna. It's almost a done deal with that celebration that he did. Celebration, I put that in real air quotes, you know, flashing like a white supremacist sign, saying horrible things. Like, imagine if a Premier League club was linked to that. The backlash would be astronomical. In Italy, crickets, crickets. I don't think I've heard one person say, you know what, this would be a terrible look. We can't have this guy there. And Bologna, compared to a lot of other places, they're pretty left-wing leaning, like even the ultra group. So I don't know. To me, I'm envious of a lot of things of the Premier League. I'm envious of the attention that there is to it. I'm envious of the stadiums. I'm envious of the fact that the Premier League, you know, can release the schedule for the whole season at the beginning so people can travel. They know when the games take place. We don't have any of that in Serie A. But what I envy the most was that the fans feel like they have agency and they can change. And look, do I get it that fans sometimes have agency in really terrible ways, like tweeting racist things and doing stuff? But guess what? That happens, unfortunately, in all leagues. But there is also the flip side of that. So I don't want to get too preachy on that, but I really respect that. And I'm just incredibly, incredibly disappointed with what's happening with the lack of backlash on Arnautovic. After that celebration, had there be any decency, would have been like, there's no way this guy's coming to our club. And I really feel had that happened in the Premier League, that's what would have happened. But let's look at the other thing that's important here. And this isn't so much on Gattuso, it's more the Fonseca aspect. And this is what I wanted to bring up. So the report was, and I know there's different reports, but the report from Italy was that the reason Fonseca didn't go to Spurs was because of taxes and because of the law that was passed in Italy a couple of years ago to make it attractive from people from abroad to come play in Italy. And that was huge in Juve getting Ronaldo. And this is very important. I also want to explain why this would apply to Fonseca, but not Gattuso. And the reason I'm saying this is, look, Gattuso's not going to Spurs, but this is going to come up with players as well. So the tax law in Italy made it, you know, for people, foreigners coming from abroad, they get a tax exemption on 50% of their salary. So if a player earns, say, 10 million on their contract, they are only taxed on 5. So huge advantage for the player, makes it very attractive, makes it easier for the club. Usually, you know, if a player is paid 3 million net, he's actually costing the club 6 million. But if the player comes from abroad, and again, that's the key, they have to come from abroad, you get that tax break. So why is this important? This is going to come up for players as well. So this came up with Fonseca. So rather you believe if that's the reason or not, this is going to come up. And I think it's really going to matter for players like Ronaldo. It's going to matter for players like Ramsey and whatnot. We're going to get to Hakimi in a second. Maybe that doesn't matter so much for a player like Hakimi, because we are talking about a really high-end piece. And so is Ronaldo, but there's a difference. Hakimi is very young, has resale value. His wages are much lower. Someone who's interested in Ramsey, like Ramsey's going to have, if he wants to leave Juve, and he says that he does, he's going to have to be aware that this tax thing, if he wants to leave Italy, is going to come up. So this is a very important takeaway. Be aware of this. If you want to learn more about the tax law, I tweeted the article yesterday. So keep an eye on that.
Okay. All right. Really well said. And yeah, the whole fan power in the Premier League, you mentioned how it didn't happen with Arnautovic. And of course, you know, Spurs fans saying no to Gattuso with a hashtag. I saw a hilarious tweet. Whatever the hashtag specifically was, it made it into the trending category. And someone said,
"Yeah,
well, Levy finally got Spurs into the top four because it was one of the top four things trending."
So, oh boy.
There you go.
They must love us in Spurs circles, but that's okay. Well, they can keep giving us content. Maybe next week we'll be talking about another former Serie A manager linked to them.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, David, let's get to another very hot topic, even in my circle. What is the latest on Hakimi?
So look, you know, last week, you know, when you and I were talking, I was like, look, at the end of the day, I still think PSG is more likely, but it looks like Chelsea are more in the race. And I have some good news for you, Alex. It won't be Jorginho going the other way, and I think Inter fans would be very happy about that, but it's looking more and more likely like it's Marcos Alonso, who I know is not your favorite player, but I think, you know, put it this way. I like Marcos Alonso more than you do, and I think in that formation, he's pretty good. I think he guarantees more than Perisic did in that role. So, you know, there's a world where even if Inter lose Hakimi, and say they replace Hakimi pretty decently, but they upgrade on the left side, where, yeah, it's a downgrade, but it's not a huge downgrade. So the latest is that, you know, Inter and Chelsea are talking. Obviously, there's going to be a big cash component, which Inter needs. But if there is going to be a player going the other way, it's more likely that it's going to be Marcos Alonso over Palmieri and Christensen, which I would imagine, Alex, especially with Tomori now full-time at Milan, I would imagine in Chelsea, had Christensen been the guy going the other way, there would have been a lot of backlash. So I'm going to say the same thing I said last week. Hakimi's awesome, really, really awesome. Any club would want him. He's young, he plays a scarce position. If Chelsea lands this and then they figure out how to fit all the pieces, I mean, you should be absolutely thrilled. But do you agree that Christensen, especially after Tomori, would have been maybe a step too far for Chelsea?
Yeah, because once again, that's a player you don't pay amortization on, you know? So yeah. If they can ball at all, can you get rid of someone else who obviously is costing you more on the books? Yeah, that would have pissed off a lot of Chelsea fans, and rightfully so. Now, maybe 6 months ago, it wouldn't have much because Christensen really was reborn under Tuchel. But now you look at Christensen a lot more positively. He's only 25. He's brilliant under Tuchel, at least in a back three. And like I said, you pay no amortization on him. So yeah, that would have been like, oh yeah, we're getting Hakimi. But why are we letting go of Christensen? So I do agree that if Chelsea can get even just one of Emerson or Alonso back in return for Hakimi, well, in return for Inter, I should say, then that's great because you're also getting rid of a player you've been trying to get rid of for a while. And if you can also add Zappacosta onto that, well, then
yeah.
That would be really good. So.
Yeah, good shout you mentioned. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned. I mean, look, Zappacosta was pretty good at Genoa. I know I always get in trouble praising him in Chelsea circles. But yeah, he was pretty good. So great shout there, because it sounds like Inter is going to get both. And I think Zappacosta's contract is going to expire at the end of next season. But yeah, it's a win-win there. So no, I actually really like this deal, to be honest, for both parties if it happens.
All right, David. Well, there's plenty of other things going on in the transfer world. So what are some of the other recent storylines that have been intriguing you?
So I got to say, and I'm going to give credit to Comiso. And look, I'm sure he's not listening. But, you know, I was on SiriusXM right after the Italy game on the news on Gattuso, you know, leaving. And I misread the situation. We really didn't have a ton of info on it. But it sounds like, you know, Fiorentina was just not down to just becoming Wolverhampton 2.0 with Gattuso and Mendes, basically picking all Mendes players there. So my apologies on SiriusXM. I just didn't have a ton of information. But, you know, when I misspeak, I always try to take ownership. But what I will say is I think Comiso and Fiorentina are responding beautifully. Granted, they don't have a manager yet, but they are, as we're recording this, they are on the verge of signing Nico Gonzalez from Stuttgart. I think that's a really nice move. You look at all of Serie A so far, I think that's the most exciting incoming signing. We really haven't had that many anyway. So Fiorentina is going to pay cash money to get, you know, a good player, young player with upside. I think he's going to fit well in various formations there. So exciting. So I would say that's really the one that stands out to me. Also, they're not in Serie A, but I want to give Parma getting Buffon, and, you know, they're trying to bring back Franco Vasquez to Serie A. That's a lot of fun. I will say yesterday, unfortunately, my Padova missed promotion to Serie B. They lost on penalty in the finals. I would have really liked to have Parma and Buffon travel to Diugano for a match. I think I would have made that game to see it in person. So I want to give credit to Comiso. I want to give credit to Parma. You know, we were talking about Arnautovic earlier. I want to give a huge shout out to Parma president Kraus. You know, I was talking about how disappointed I am with the lack of backlash on Arnautovic. And this maybe talks even more to the culture in Italy, like Kraus with Parma. They played a game with a BLM kit. There actually was backlash against that. So make of that what you will. So kudos to Comiso, kudos to Kraus. I'll be rooting for you in that sense, for sure. So before you get to hear the beginning of my chat with Napoli Outsider, we're going to do a section of the pod for our patrons. If you enjoy Calcioland, definitely consider becoming a patron. We have a Tuesday episode just for patrons. We answer all their questions. We have monthly specials. What you will hear from Napoli Outsider is just the beginning of our monthly special. We usually go 90 minutes like a game, and we try to cover it all. And we try to do it in a way, you know, thoughtful is maybe the best way that I can put it. So I think you'll really enjoy that. I think those are absolutely worth the price of subscription. You're also going to get my transfer rumor raider column starting next week. So if you enjoy the transfer window, a lot of great stuff there. This is one of my favorite parts of the month, is when I get to chat with Napoli Outsider on the pod. Him and I chat via messages every day pretty frequently, but it's really nice to bring you guys behind the curtains, because one of the things that I like to do with these shows is kind of bring you in a little bit to the types of things that him and I talk about. Maybe we aren't as cynical on the show as we are in the messages, but I think you guys will enjoy it. So today we are going to cover a lot of the Mercato. I do want to ask our friend a couple of questions on the Euro, but we'll cover mainly the transfer window, and hopefully in a way that you find both informative and engaging. So my friend, it's always a real pleasure to chat with you. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Hey, David, thanks for having me. It's always a blast to be able to talk some culture. So let's get into it.
Okay, so let's start here. I want to ask you this about Italy. I definitely see Sarri's Napoli as one of the main inspirations for Mancini's Italy. I think especially once he solidified the midfield with Jorginho, Verratti, Barella. I think Spinazzola is kind of someone that has a little bit of Goulam in him. It's not surprising Jorginho and Insigne are doing well in this formation. So let me ask you, obviously you are as familiar as anyone with Sarri's Napoli. Do you think there are some similarities between the two teams?
There's certainly enough inspiration, and there are certainly points of contact. Now, there's also there are obviously differences as well, because it's not exactly the same team, and the implementation is a little different. But first of all, it all starts with positional football with a basic 4-3-3 formation. And then what Sarri used to do, he used to set up a series of triangles around the pitch where every player always had at least two options in a triangle, as the corners of a triangle, or even three or more. And that was happening at all times, and that allowed, obviously, for one- or two-touch football. In the case of Mancini, there is a difference. It's not, for example, it's not symmetrical. Sarri's Napoli was very symmetrical. Mancini's Italy is not. And that's the main difference. But, I mean, it's positionally, it's the same thing. It's they try to control the game, one- or two-touch football, possession. They always keep the ball on the ground. So, obviously, there's a clear influence. And guess what? I would say that the main man in the center of the pitch, the one that controls the game, is the same. And having Jorginho there, giving the tempo and the rhythm to the game, is so fundamental if you want to play in this way. In fact, in a formation like Sarri's Napoli or Italy's or Mancini's Italy, if you don't have Jorginho, then all of a sudden everything, I'm not saying it's going to fall apart, but you've got to make some adjustments because he is the mastermind, basically. The rhythm of the game goes through him, and he is the one that gives you the chance to play one- or two-touch football all around the pitch. Now, regarding the symmetry, for example, with Sarri, one of the fullbacks would push forward, and the other one would stay back. With Italy, it's always the right back who stays back. We see Spinazzola pushing upfield, and we see Insigne cut inside, usually. On the right, Florenzi, for the whole first half against Turkey, always stayed back. And it's always the right back who stays back. So this is the main difference. And on the right, Berardi is the one who stays wide, whereas on the left, it's Spinazzola who stays wide and Insigne who cuts inside. But the mechanisms are the same. So it's just the choice of men doing the movements that changes. But, I mean, once you get beyond these basic differences, it's really a slightly different implementation of the same concepts. And once it's positional football, I mean, it's obvious that Mancini drew his inspiration from Sarri's Napoli. I mean, it's clearly clear and evident. But what I think, where I think Mancini deserves compliments is that he didn't just copy the game plan, which wouldn't have worked because you're lacking players like Hamsik or like Callejon, or especially the center forward, Mertens or Higuain, whoever he was, that would have been indispensable. He started with the inspiration of Sarri's Napoli, and then he implemented it the best way he could with the players he had. So I think he deserves a lot of compliments for that.
For sure, for sure. So we just watched France-Germany. We made a point of recording afterwards. We've seen all the teams. I mean, I got to be honest, I think Italy, and we know Turkey wasn't that good, but you know, maybe they weren't the weakest opponent either. Italy, I have to say, really looks good to me. You know way better than me the international football. So based on what you've seen so far, what you knew about the teams going into the tournament, how far do you think Mancini can take this team?
You know, I only see one team that's head and shoulders above everybody else. And because it's only one, it can always fall. It just needs one bad game. And I'm talking about France. I mean, France, you saw the game against Germany. They didn't have the ball most of the time. They only had 38% possession. Germany was upfield. They had more shots. They had more everything, basically. But France never, not once, seemed like it was going to fall down or allow goals or whatever. They always seemed in control. And then whenever they decided to accelerate, it seemed like they just had three or four extra gears as opposed to Germany. And that's just scary. Looks like they're just, you know, taking a stroll in the park, and then all of a sudden you have Mbappe racing, you have Pogba making incredible passes, you have Benzema just teaching football to everybody. It's incredible what they can do. That being said, they only need one bad game to get out of there. And then once they do get out, I think it's actually pretty wide open because Italy is certainly playing very well. I really like Belgium. I like Spain. I mean, not they didn't play well. They were disappointing in the first game. But if they can play Gerard Moreno as a center forward instead of Morata, I think they might solve their goal-scoring problem. And then at that point, they could be pretty good as well. And obviously, Portugal, you never know what they can give you. They won the last Nations League, and they won the European Championships themselves. And England, too. I mean, England, usually they find a way to shoot themselves in the foot when they play in major competitions. But they have a lot of talent, so you can't draw them out. The only thing is somebody has to be able to get France out of the way, because they are really way, way too good for everybody else on an individual basis. I don't know if they're coached, if their coach is the best of the bunch, but Deschamps has been plenty good enough for them to be the best. So that's the whole issue. But I mean, again, it's only one team that really looks that good to me. Everybody else, it just depends of who gets hot. And guess what? Italy right now seems to have the best game plan. And so why not? I mean, they just get a little bit of luck, you know, no injuries. And they could go deep. They could.
Yeah, I certainly agree. But I trust your judgment on that a lot more. Okay, so let's shift gears. Let's get into Serie A. Before we really get into transfers, I have to ask you, what was your reaction to Sarri going to Lazio? I know for a while we were like, hey, it'd be great if Comiso spent the money and they signed them. I think the fact that Lotito spent the money on getting Sarri, I see that as he knew Inzaghi leaving was a big loss and that he needed to do something. I see kind of this as kind of a new cycle at Lazio. They are going to change formation, philosophy. I'm very intrigued by this. I think Sarri, talent-wise, has a very intriguing squad. I think culturally, politics aside, which him and Lazio probably are as opposite as it gets. But you know what I mean, culture of the city and whatnot, I think it actually fits well. So I love Sarri probably more than you do right now, and I'm pretty happy with that. So what do you make of him going to Lazio?
I think that's the best he could look for. I mean, there weren't any top teams interested in him. And I think that speaks volumes, honestly. Not because he's not a good coach, but because the package, you know, the baggage he brings along does count for something. And again, I can't stress this enough. If Chelsea took him and let him go after one season, and then Juventus took him and they let him go after one season, and, you know, reasonably successful seasons. I'm not going to say they were good, because I don't think they were good. Chelsea fans were expecting more in the league, and I think once Tuchel took over from Lampard, he showed them the potential of that club, even though there were some changes, obviously, from Sarri's times. But Sarri did worse than Tuchel, he did worse than Conte as well. And then he went to Juventus, and he did worse than Allegri. And again, he did better than Lampard and Pirlo, but I mean, those two guys... It's not Sarri, really. But both teams, Chelsea and Juventus, decided not to give him a second year. They let him go happily. Chelsea was really happy to let him go, and Juventus actually were happy to pay him and keep him away from the club. So that tells me that there are some limitations to him, and it's not necessarily tactical limitations, but I think it's more of a management thing, because these days, once you are the manager of a club, you're almost a manager, not a coach anymore. You have to manage the squad. You have to manage egos. You have to manage people. And I don't think he's very good at that. I've heard just this week from Giaccherini. I don't know if Giaccherini, you're going to say, who is he? But the point is, Giaccherini was really important for the national team with Conte. And regardless of that, when a guy like him says, Sarri doesn't even speak to you if you're not one of his titolarissimi, if you're not one of his starters, he doesn't even speak to you. I think that's an issue, because you cannot go through a whole season of 55, 60 games by only speaking to 11 to 13 players. And I think from a human standpoint, I think that makes a difference as well. You know, the stories you hear about Sarri every now and then, they get canceled out because people like the way he plays, at least in Napoli. But, I mean, once he actually called Koulibaly, who was in the hospital assisting his wife, who was giving birth, and there were some troubles too, and he said, no, you got to come. Absolutely, you got to come. You're fundamental and everything. So he went to the game, Koulibaly, and then Sarri kept him on the bench for the whole 90 minutes. You know, people close an eye on that kind of stuff. Koulibaly himself did so because obviously he does owe a lot to Sarri. But ultimately, these things do count, and I think not everybody's so happy about the way he's managed people. Yesterday, Higuain said pretty much the same thing. He was being interviewed by Christian Vieri and his gang, and Higuain said, yeah, it looks like the players didn't really, he didn't get really in rhythm with the players and into their heads and everything. So I think you need some skills beyond simple tactics. And that's why top teams didn't want him. That all this being said, I think a team like Lazio, a team that's always on the cusp of breaking into the top four, and which actually did so last year, is one of the best options for him because they do have a lot of talent, because they do have the possibility of getting into the Champions League, because they have the possibility of winning the Italian Cup. So having a team like that, that on one side does not have the super pressure of the really top teams, like, for example, Chelsea or Juventus, but at the same time does have enough talent to contend, maybe just in the league, maybe just in the cups, but they can contend with those teams. I think that's the perfect situation for Sarri, where he doesn't have to think about, hey, how am I going to manage a guy like Ronaldo? How am I going to manage an ego of this guy or whatever? He can just think about training them, about coaching them. So it's kind of, in a way, going back to his Napoli days, where, you know, he's got actually a president that's pretty similar to Napoli's president in terms of personality.
Absolutely.
He's got a front office that's pretty similar because, you know, teams like Juventus or Chelsea have like a boatload of directors and people in suits walking around. Napoli and Lazio don't have that many people. So it's I think it's a very good situation for him, especially if Lotito does get the two or three players he needs to change the roster from a 3-5-2 basic formation to a 4-3-3, which should not be too hard, because actually a lot of Lazio's players, if once you look at the squad, they can already get adapted to that new system. So it is a good situation, but that being said, and I mean, I don't want to keep harping on this, but it is important. In the last 20 years, so this goes back to the Serie C days, Sarri has, you know, a lot of people say, hey, De Laurentiis couldn't keep him and everything. Well, nobody in the last 20 years has kept Sarri as much as De Laurentiis did. Napoli is the team that he coached the most in terms of games played and in terms of days at the helm. So he was at Empoli also for 3 years, but it was less time and also fewer games. But that's the point. Sarri doesn't last more than one or two, did not last one, more than 1 or 2 years with any other team in the last 20 years of his career. I think that, I mean, at some point, it's not just the presidents who let him go. You know, everybody's crazy. I mean, he's got to have something. And his former assistants also say that, because he's dumped assistant after assistant. He's changed his staff. He's also changed his historic agent. He breaks up with everybody. So, you know, if you cannot build a bond with your team or with your players, even having a good tactical setup, it's always going to be a tenuous bond with the team. And as soon as things start going wrong, they're going to break down. So, again, I think Lazio, Fiorentina too, would have been a good decision, obviously, if Misa had decided to pony up the money, which he did not. But last year, I think it's just about perfect, as perfect as it gets for Sarri. I don't think he could have had anything better than a Roman team, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, what a perfect backhanded compliment you gave him to with that answer. But no, look, I love Sarri, but you did make some good points in the Koulibaly story. I think I had selective amnesia on that one. Okay, let's get into the meat and potatoes of what I want to talk about, the transfer window. So we're going to try to cover this, you know, looking at details, but trying to keep the big picture. So let's start here. It's June 15th. We still have a lot of time to go with transfers. There's the Euro going. But I have to say the beginning of the transfer window in Serie A, I mean, I had very low expectations. It might actually be even lower than that because I feel like the three big dominant stories, if you will, were Donnarumma. He's heading to PSG. We had the idea that maybe Milan could get Depaul, although I always had a feeling he was going abroad. He's on the way going to Atletico Madrid. And then the other big storyline is on Hakimi. Is he going to be the only guy that Inter lose? And we're going to get into them in a second. So let me ask you this. Do you think we can just chalk it up to, well, there's also the Euro going on. There's a lot of attention to that and things will get better after the Euro? Or we really should set our expectations really, really low for the rest of the way?
Well, the good news is that things will have to get better because they can't get any worse. I mean, literally everything is frozen. Teams are just selling abroad right now. There is nothing, literally nothing happening. The most exciting thing was Milan signing Mike Maignan, but they signed him because they lost Donnarumma. So the most exciting thing was a downgrade, with all due respect, you know. So they will have to get better, obviously. Now, how much and how much does the Euro play into this? That's the interesting question. I think the Euro does play into it for the simple reason that there's no money. So not being there any money, they have to be very careful and watchful of everything. Because right now, you know, in past years, you would just go in, hey, I want that guy. You would go and you would buy him. But right now, if you go there, and especially if it's a guy who's playing in the European Championship, well, teams are going to build his price up because obviously they expect players to look good, to shine, you know, under the light of the Euros and so on. So I think that's actually going to slow down the market because there isn't much money and the teams cannot match the requests at present. And then everything is going to speed up later. Because selling teams are going to figure out, hey, I still have this guy on my hands, so I got to get rid of him. So the asking prices are going to go down. Obviously, this also means that Italian teams are always going to get the second or third choices of foreign teams, but we already knew that. So it's a combination, but it all stems from the fact that there's no money. I mean, if they had money, they would just go and get the player, just like teams do elsewhere. Think about Real Madrid getting Alaba. They just went and they got him. And in a way, Paris Saint-Germain, it seems like they're close to getting Aurier from Tottenham. So that actually might block Hakimi at that point, because Inter obviously are asking for a huge amount of money for him. Now, every team is going to depend on selling. And you mentioned Depaul, for example. Now, I didn't think Milan would be able to get him because he costs so much. It sounds
neither
like Atletico is going to get him. For
neither
that
I never bought Milan. And sadly, because look, I feel like almost any top Serie A team could use the poll. But anytime Milan asked me, I was like, sorry, I just don't see it.
You know, I would have loved for Napoli to get him. But I think Napoli actually having Zielinski is probably maybe the only team that is kind of covered in that situation, unless obviously they decided to sell Zielinski, because they're pretty similar players. But yes, you're absolutely right. He could play for anybody. The problem there is Milan couldn't afford him, and I have the feeling that the only reason for which his name was connected to Milan was to get Calhanoglu's price a little lower. They kind of have to keep him, right? If you think about what Milan has done, they have already spent almost 60 million.
Yeah.
Well, actually, they spent over 40. I don't know if Tonali is official yet. They brought his price down because they only had him on loan, obviously. But he's going to get almost 60 million once just you consider Maignan, Tomori, and Tonali, which means that to keep two guys and downgrade from Donnarumma to Maignan, they've already spent so much money that's going to give trouble to the rest of the transfer market. So they kind of now have to keep Calhanoglu, and they have to meet his demands, and then they have to keep Ibrahimovic with a huge salary, and Ibrahimovic is hurt. So they still have to get a center forward, they have to get other guys, and it sounds like they might be selling Theo Hernandez. they have to figure it out, because honestly, I think Milan's situation is probably the most interesting right now, because they have a lot to do on the transfer market, and I'm not sure they have a lot of money because they've already spent so much. And everybody else, you know, it sounds like the only team that might have money might be your favorite guys from close to Milan, the Bergamaschi, right?
Yeah, well, we're going to get to them. So, yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, we're going to get to them. Yeah, so I think that was really important for us to start there, just the big picture. So let's get to the teams. Let's start with Inter and Hakimi. I took them in order from the standings. Right. So, look, obviously, Hakimi, I think, was your first pick when we did the draft of the half season. I have to say, after this weekend, maybe my Kier pick doesn't look so bad anymore, but he was one of your first picks there. He's been awesome, great player, perfect for Conte's formation. Obviously would work out really well for Inzaghi, but let's say Hakimi leaves. How big of a blow is that to Inter?
Huge, obviously. I mean, there's nobody even close to Hakimi in Italy, especially in a 3-5-2 setting. If they played with a four-man back line, that would be different because he would be a lot more exposed defensively, where he's not very good. But playing with a 3-5-2 with Skriniar covering his back, oh, I mean, there's nothing like him. Now, that being said, obviously, they're going to have to sell somebody. If they manage to sell Hakimi for the prices we've heard, then they might be able to sell only him. And at that point, who knows? Maybe you go to Lazio and you will get Lazzari. Lazzari doesn't really fit in a 4-3-3 formation, and he does fit into Inzaghi's game plan. And he's probably going to cost no more than 20 or 25 million because, of course, he doesn't really fit Sarri's system unless he uses him as his new Callejon. But now we're getting ahead of us a little bit. And that's the whole point. That's my whole point. If you can do something like that, obviously you're going to have a sizable downgrade, but it might be the only move you need to make to stay afloat. And obviously, if that's the only move you need to make, then you can challenge for the Scudetto next year once again. Obviously, you're not going to go with 90-plus points because you're going to have a new coach that's not as good as the previous one, although Inzaghi is certainly an above-average coach. You're going to have a slightly weaker team, and probably you're not going to punt on the Champions League like you did last year because you're going to be seeded this year. So all these things are going to contribute to lose points in the standings. But, you know, even if you go from 91 to 83, 84, you're still going to be able to challenge right until the end. And if you don't, well, that's going to fall in Inzaghi's shoulders, obviously.